I think we are joined now by Mr. Stephen Gowans. Are you there, sir?
I am. Hello.
Hello. I'm sure glad we could talk to you, Steve, because you have written an article that seems to me is right on the money in terms of the questions of the day. This is this rather frightening exercise involving the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. So I guess we short form North Korea. All last week, I was seeing scary commentary, all kinds of photographs of the young president, and then with practically everybody, including all America's best-known comedians, jumping in, talking about how they could flatten, we could flatten Korea, and we could incinerate everybody, and of course, playing for laughs. And then at the end of the week, you point out the Wall Street Journal had a story about how, they're going to dial it down or something. And that was a spark for you to write. Tell us what you took from the Wall Street Journal.
I think that the Wall Street Journal article was very significant and important because it kind of departed from the usual way in which the media is treating this, in saying that North Korea is belligerent and North Korea is provoking the United States. Instead, what the Wall Street Journal said was that the White House months ago had approved a detailed plan, which they called the playbook, to ratchet up tension with North Korea during the Pentagon's war games with Korea. Mm-hmm. And now the war games are already provocative because these are going on for 2 months. They involve the deployment of a massive amount of military hardware within striking distance of North Korea. But the White House, through a plan that was formulated by the Pentagon's Pacific Command, decided that they would aggravate the tension in Pyongyang beyond the tension that was already going to be created by the war games by doing things that we saw happen. Low-altitude B-52 bomber flights over the Korean Peninsula. And it was planned that these would be low-altitude so that everyone could see what was going on. Also planned were the two nuclear-capable B-2 bombers doing mock bombing runs on a South Korean missile range. And interestingly, these flights, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, were deliberately carried out in broad daylight at low altitude. And a U.S. defense official said, well, we could have flown at night, but the point was for them to see it. Yeah. And then a few days ago, the Pentagon deployed two advanced F-22 warplanes to South Korea, which was also part of this playbook plan to intimidate Pyongyang.
And by the way, isn't that the equivalent of a playground thing where you put the chip on the guy's shoulder? I mean, and dare him to. I mean, if you say, I'm going to fly right over your space, of course, I'm just having a game here. Well, he can't assume it's a game, can he?
No, he can't. I mean, how do the North Koreans know this is a game and not an actual preparation for an actual invasion? Interestingly, the Wall Street Journal also noted that the White House knew that the North Koreans would react by threatening to retaliate against the United States and South Korea. And they also noted in an early article that defense officials had acknowledged that the North Korean military was particularly agitated by bomber flights because of memories of the destruction wrought during the Korean War. So this was all coldly and calculatingly planned. The intention was to draw forth an aggressive, a rhetorical reaction from North Korea. But at a certain point, Washington decided that maybe they'd gone too far and that perhaps, as they put it, this would lead to a miscalculation on North Korea's part. So they declared then that they were going to dial back on the provocation. Despite that, we still see media reports that continue to suggest that it's the North Koreans that are provocative here rather than the United States.
Yeah, you point out, by the way, you notice how this, well, you're the one who pointed it out, that they say, well, he's young, he's inexperienced, we don't want him to do something silly. There's no evidence that he's not actually experienced. I mean, he's part of the operation there. He's there. what are their ages and who thought of this idea to provoke? The curious idea. It seems to me they use these, just like you say on the overflight where they say, oh, they're remembering when we blasted them to pieces. The guy who said that was, of course, one of the perpetrators. And now then he says, oh, we don't want him to do something stupid. Well, so far he hasn't done anything stupid. I mean, the stupid part seems to be these crazy sending warplanes along a border, which is that sensitive.
Right. And I mean, this is deliberate. It's coldly planned. And that's why there's this concern about the miscalculation. But it's all part of this putting enormous pressure on North Korea to further cripple its economy beyond what it's already been crippled by sanctions, mm-hmm. and to hope that the regime collapses. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, in this case, I mean, you could use street language to say that Washington challenged North Korea to a game of chicken, and they broke it off when it became clear that the game might not unfold as planned. Yes. I mean, you can blame or dislike North Korea for what's called its belligerent rhetoric, its threats to attack U.S. military bases in the Pacific, for example. But another thing that the media has failed to do is to point out that these threats are conditional. It's not as if suddenly the North Koreans woke up and said, I think that we'll threaten the United States today. These are conditional threats, as in, if you continue along the path you're traveling down today, if you attack us, then we will retaliate.
Mm-hmm. Which is a rhetoric the U.S. is quite familiar with when it comes out of their own mouths.
Yes. Yes. However, when it comes out of their own mouths, it's put in a much different way. I've noticed recently that the New York Times talked about North Korean provocations, but the U.S. displays of force, you see.
I showed him force, and he cursed me.
I also noticed today that the Wall Street Journal, going back to its old way of reporting, is talking about North Korea perhaps testing a missile in the next few days, which they described as a provocation. But it also turns out that the United States is planning to test an ICBM next week.
If you're doing it yourself, it's old hat. It's a new kid that gets the attention. This is Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. Excellent article, and I hope that our folks will go to that site. It's gowans.wordpress.com. Stephen, we've spoken. I realize now that the U.S. and its South Korean ally, they engage in war games, and we end up focused on them. And you've written about this. It wasn't that long ago that the U.S. and South Korea were shelling an island, or saying they were going to shell it. I don't know if they ever did it. That the North Koreans, Democratic People's Republic of Korea, claims. I mean, that was really calculated to bring everything right to the edge.
Yeah, and it's just part of this campaign that's been going on for decades of provoking and pushing the North Koreans, of forcing them onto a perpetual war footing, which becomes very exhausting I mean, forces them to squander very scarce resources. I mean, it's a small country. It has an economy that's struggling under the weight of all of the sanctions that have been imposed upon it. It's the most sanctioned country in the world and has been sanctioned for decades upon decades upon decades. Mm-hmm. And this is all part of the program to cripple North Korea.
The crime of sending the Russians and the Chinese home, whereas their South Korean brothers keep the Americans.
Yes, that's right.
I have to ask you, what about the... I noticed they're tying this in with Syria, and the headlines, one of them I saw was that American senators are fed up with North Korea this time. And then but in their interviews, they're saying they're just like Syria. They're both crazy. But then they say it's time to for the Chinese and the Russians to, bring down the hammer on North Korea. And they claim they see signs of it. Do you see any signs of either Russia or China taking a different stance on this subject?
No. Well, I mean, today, for example, the media was saying that North Korea, or rather, let me back up, the media was talking about the Chinese president criticizing North Korea obliquely. He was reported to have said no one should be allowed to throw a region or even the whole world into chaos for selfish gain. And the U.S. press immediately interprets this to mean that the Chinese president was referring to North Korea.
Not talking about us.
Yeah, I mean, a stronger case can be made that he's referring to the United States. And, you know, what possible selfish gain could there be in North Korea, which is a military pipsqueak in comparison to the United States becoming entangled in a war with the Colossus?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's the threat that the United States has reported to have made to China, which is, okay, if you don't want us present in the Pacific Asian region, you know, more decisively than we've been to this point, then you better do something about North Korea. Well, that kind of contradicts the whole idea of the pivot, doesn't it? I mean, I don't think the Chinese have a choice in this matter.
Mm-hmm. No, and by the way, I'm glad we're talking to you about this, and everybody ought to realize the rhetoric I notice is basically stable. There's nothing surprising coming in any UN statements or whatnot. It's like if Putin says, well, you need a negotiated settlement in Syria and everybody has to behave. They say, see, he's talking about Assad. He better behave.
Right, yeah.
I'm really glad we have Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. Excellent article about the Wall Street Journal's reflections on this matter. Steve, thank you very, very much. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Earlier we were talking to J.J. Hespeler-Boltby. I want you to note again that the title of that book is Mrs. Queen's Chump. He owes that title to Idi Amin. And it's a great reflection of what it's like to be a British soldier. And, of course, we talked to Marie-Rose Hebiomana about the assassination of her father and how that triggered the events of 1994.